Maximum Health with your host, Dr. Ken Gray. Dr. Gray obtained his master's in both acupuncture and oriental medicine from the Atlantic Institute of Oriental Medicine. Dr. Gray enjoys both being a physician as well as being an educator. His unique approach to holistic healing has taken him abroad to lecture in Germany and treat sports professionals in Hawaii and France. He is co-author of several books on food therapy. His office is in Jupiter, Florida, where he has practiced for over a decade and where he resides. Now it's time for Maximum Health with Dr. Ken Gray.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make a better place with my own two hands, make a kinder place. Oh, with my own two hands, with my own two hands.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Maximum Health Radio, Quality Living, with yours truly, Dr. Ken Gray, Holistic Physician. Thank you for joining us every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard on 88.9 FM, WQCS. That is NPR, National Public Radio of the Treasure Coast. And we are available in past shows, and this show will be available in all future shows on the Public Radio Exchange, a wonderful free service, prx.org. And you can look up Maximum Health for podcasts. This show is always, we have wonderful guests, knowledgeable and come with many attributes. And but the topic, though, was struck because of what's going on in Florida and has been going on for some time. But what really hit me was one day I'm driving along the beach with my kids and we couldn't breathe. And we did not know why. And we were all coughing and our chest was burning. And our skin was sensitive, and we were driving, so we thought, hey, we're along the beach. This is supposed to be clean air. This is supposed to be one of the most wonderful things to do on a Sunday afternoon, and it wasn't. And it was when we realized, and I started to look up online, that there was red tide in the Atlantic Ocean, along a place where there's supposed to be lots of great current, beautiful crystal clear blue water in Jupiter, Florida, and it was not so. So as I decided to do some more research, I realized that we are long past trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube. We are in a place of dire need for attention. This should be classified as a national disaster. So what did I do? I contacted the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and they put me in touch with our guest today, who is Dr. Quay Dortch, the program manager for EcoHab, which is Dr. Dortch.
Oh, Ecology and Oceanography of Harmful Algal Blooms.
Love it. See, off air, guys, listeners, I tried to say that, and I just, you know, I got, I hit some hitches there. But thank you, Dr. Quay, and thank you for joining us. It's such a pleasure and honor, and I hope you can give us some sort of light at the end of this rainbow, or lack thereof.
Yes, well, I'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
Yes. Well, right now, what we're looking at is a situation where I have been in Florida, well, Jupiter, Florida, for many years now, and over 20. I don't remember there being red tide on the Atlantic, in the Atlantic Ocean or on this coast, and we've been suffering with our waterways. We've been suffering with algae blooms, and we have had it on the Gulf. And I'm kind of wondering, I guess, first off, is this abnormal? Is this something we should really be concerned of? Or is this just a course of nature that just happens every once in a while?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is a natural phenomena. It was first reported by the Spaniards when they came to Florida. They referred to miasma and dead fish, which are the two things that you mentioned, the miasma, the difficulty breathing, and the other characteristic is the dead fish that we see now. And so there are other reports in the newspaper following that, and then first the federal government and then what later became FWRI started studying it and reporting it, and they actually have a timeline on their website that shows when it occurred. And it's on the west coast, southwest coast, it's an almost, not quite, annual occurrence. but I put together a list from all the sources I could find of how often it occurred on the East Coast, where you are, and I was surprised at how often it was.
Really?
And I think you probably would be too. So reading backwards, this year, 2011, 2008, 2007, 2006, which was a really bad one on both coasts, 2002, 1999, 1997, 1990, and so on, back to 1946.
So it has happened. That's oddly comforting. But has it happened to this intensity? Because when it occurred here most recently, it went from a Friday to a Friday, and it's still really not cleared up. So it's still going on, and we're over a week into it. Is that...
Well, unfortunately, yes. The really bad years, some of the years that I listed, there was just a brief report, and it was not a major problem, and that's why people don't realize how frequently it can occur. But
gotcha.
2006-2007 was apparently an equally bad period of time, and it tends to be bad on the East Coast when they've had bad events occurring on the West Coast, which just increased the odds of it getting transported around the Keys. What's different this time is that the Keys so far, keep your fingers crossed, have not been impacted.
Mm-hmm. And that is a good thing, because we don't want the Keys impacted. We don't want anywhere impacted. But what is concerning me, too, is there's two types of algal blooms. Obviously, red tide is a specific one of them, correct?
Yes, actually, there are many, many kinds. And even for red tides, there are different kinds of red tides in different parts of the country.
Hmm.
And they have different toxins, different organisms. They're totally different in their impacts.
Okay, so then what is it, for our listeners, what really is red tide, and what is it that we are really concerning ourselves with?
So the one in Florida is a tiny little organism. You can't see it with the naked eye. You need a pretty good microscope to see it. It's really unique in that it's considered a plant. It's an algae. It photosynthesizes, but it's also got many animal characteristics. For example, it can swim. It can move up and down in the water column, so it can be where it wants to be. To get light and nutrients. It also eats other organisms as a mode of nutrition besides photosynthesis. And then on top of that, we think that one of the reasons, and there may be multiple reasons it produces toxins, is it actually deliberately kills fish, so that when there's a big bloom of this red tide, it can get more nutrients by killing fish and then living off what gets dissolved in the water.
Mm.
So it's for a single-celled organism, it's pretty complicated. It's determined to live and cause blooms.
Wow. So we're talking about something that's showing intelligence. And what is it that we should be concerned with? Or is there anything we can do to lessen the occurrence, you know, and also the intensity of this?
That's a tough question, because everybody has asked generally, and me specifically, whether nutrients that are coming from human activities are a cause. The other thing that people often cite is warming water, so I'll address each of those. Certainly it requires nutrients to live, and as human populations have increased along the coast, nutrients getting in the coastal waters have increased. The thing is that NOAA funded a study that was a very comprehensive 5-year study to look at the nutrient sources, and the immediate nutrient sources for the bloom are not necessarily things coming from human activities. However, human activities can increase the nutrients that are available in the coastal zone. And so in an indirect sense, it's probably true that by reducing nutrients, you could reduce the intensity and frequency of these blooms. We don't know that for sure. The other thing is global warming, and I think that is even less certain, because right now the waters around Florida are too high for the organism. So things grow, as temperatures increase, things grow faster. But it reaches a point where it's called its optimum, and then the growth rate actually goes down. And waters on the west coast of Florida this year, we were looking at this specifically, were actually too high for it to grow fast. So I'm not sure that global warming is going to be a major factor.
Mm.
So the way NOAA has looked at this for the short run anyway is the best thing to do is to provide people with information so that they can avoid areas where the red tide is and go to areas where it's not.
Now, the West Coast, though, it's hard to get away from at this point. I mean,
yes, but some beaches are impacted when other beaches are not, because the aerosol problem that you talked about mm-hmm. is really dependent on the wind direction and where the beach is. Mm-hmm. And so what NOAA's working towards has not quite yet achieved is providing a forecast for every beach every day. Mm-hmm. So that if you want to go to the beach, you can go to one beach but not the other beach, and you can go online and find out which beach is the best. Right now it's doing it at a sub-county level, and it's also doing it for the East Coast. And that way you at least have some idea how bad it's going to be in general areas.
Right.
For Pinellas County, they're actually beta testing, and it's on the southwest coast, they're actually beta testing the every beach every day, which requires somebody to go down to the beach and take samples every day. That's mm-hmm. the hitch in this. And then they use models of what the wind is going to do and what the ocean currents are going to do to predict whether there's going to be a problem with aerosol on the beach.
And is there something that your average person who is not a scientist can do to find out the levels, what is safe for their family? I mean, besides testing with their own bodies and whether or not, you know, they're suffocating at the beach. But, you know, water levels, is it safe to go in even though I don't sense it with my lungs? You know, what can we do?
I would say if a beach is impacted and you smell it, you'd be better off not doing recreation on that beach.
Right.
Moat Marine Lab has a webpage where they do give the beach conditions. And so people can go there and look. That's part of this larger project that I was talking about.
Right.
I don't have the exact website, but I can give it to you later.
Right. And I don't want to, you know, again, this so far seems fairly positive, but I can tell you I feel that what I've seen, you know, I used to, when I started fishing years ago, I used to go to Mosquito Lagoon and, you know, around the area of Cocoa Beach in northern Florida. Or central, and most of that's destroyed. Most of the waters have been affected by so much of the runoff and the imbalance of everything. And yes, I think the hotter waters and the algae blooms and all of this, it really seems overwhelming. And I think, I feel like it's getting worse. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but as a state, and I know you're in Maryland and it's a national organization, but is NOAA really sending people and looking and seeing what's going on and talking to the fishermen and looking in these waters that used to thrive with fish and that are not? I mean, I know we want to say scientifically on paper it's okay, but it's not. I live here.
Well, no, and that's not the message that I'm sending. And NOAA has had people down there and does actually have people. For example, one of the things that we're doing right now is we have an event response program mm-hmm. that funds, quick turnaround research to help people. And one of them went to FWRI to do survey cruises, to help them with survey cruises. And another one is going to a NOAA lab that's going to start on the East Coast and go around the Keys and then go to the Southwest to look at the impacts on fish and also whether the bloom is actually in where it is on the East Coast and whether it's in the Keys, because the people in the Keys keep saying, are we going to get hit with it?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know, you know, whether it's lurking offshore there. So, yes, we're trying to provide specific answers to questions that people are asking right now.
Okay. And again, for those that might just be tuning in, we're on the phone here with NOAA's Dr. Quay Dortch. And NOAA's mission is to educate and inspire the nation to use science toward improving ocean and coastal stewardship, increasing safety and resilience to environmental hazards, and preparing a future workforce to support NOAA's mission. When I look at these ideas of how we go forward and how we repair what is happening, because again, there's been frequency and it's happened before, and this is not the first, nothing new under the sun, sounds like, but this is something in the back of my mind saying, you know, this, it feels like this is going to get worse, more nutrients being man-made or man-affected nutrients pumped into the waters, hotter times, we were seeing increase of, you know, more hurricanes. And so there's something to do with heat and nature and, you know, our effect of it. There's all this new data coming out. And I think, yes, we're pretty early in determining the long-term effects of it, and if there is, but it sounds like there's a little bit of snowball effect that might be brewing. So is there a solution in place through your studies, through your relationships with, you know, your national agency and other scientists that can help us and that would be implemented, provided that these things start to get a lot worse very quick?
Certainly there's research going on right now about trying to actually do something to control blooms. There is, and this is not funded by NOAA, so but I do know about it. The state is providing some funding to a group that's going to try something called clay mitigation.
Okay.
If you spray, and this has been used in Asia extensively for a long time, clay on a red tide, a specific kind of clay, mm-hmm. treated in a particular way, the organisms stick to the clay and sink to the bottom.
Mm.
And so they're going to be doing, they're planning for a pilot study. I don't know if the date has been set. NOAA funded some pilot studies about 10 years ago, and it was effective, but it was thought at the time that the clay was not suitable for use in Florida and other locations. But there are new clays that have come out, and so they're going to test these new clays to see if they work and if they're effective, cost-effective, and don't have any environmental impacts. If
gotcha.
That turns out to be the case, then there would be a tool that would be available.
Okay, that's promising. You know, something being in medicine and learning about single-celled organisms and such, is there some idea that enzymatic, processes could be used to sort of balance out the overgrowth?
I don't know about enzymatic because enzymes don't tend to last long in the environment. They break down and make great food for other organisms.
Okay.
But we are funding a study looking at a naturally occurring compound produced by bacteria that appears to cause the death of... So Carinia brevis, the red tide, is in a group of organisms called dinoflagellates. And some of those dinoflagellates have very thin coats.
Right.
And the ones with the very thin coats seem to be conducive to being broken up or killed by this particular compound. So we're funding some studies, and they're going to do field tests sometime in the not-too-distant future.
Okay.
But what they're doing right now is testing to make sure it doesn't harm other organisms.
Right.
So that's the first thing.
Right, exactly. We've got enough organisms being harmed. We don't want to add to it.
So be careful what you wish for.
Exactly, yes. Now, thinking about simple questions that our listeners may have. How poisonous, when you hear toxin, right, release toxin, you think poison. And you want to think long-term effects on the lungs and sinuses and so forth. I've been treating a lot more allergy or allergic responses in patients due to this. Is, based on the scientific evidence, is there some long-term effects with being exposed to the red tide or any algal bloom release toxins in the air?
I don't think anybody has done that research, and it's a critical need right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is not something that NOAA generally funds, the health effects. There are other agencies that do that, and it needs to be done.
Okay. So, and now you work with other agencies. So what agencies, listeners want to be in touch with those agencies, would you recommend for those sort of questions?
Well, NIEHS funded almost 10-year study of the acute respiratory effects of the toxins.
Right.
And that is the basis of a lot of what we know right now about that miasma that you experienced.
Okay.
They, as far as I know, but they may have in this recent round of funding, done some more long-term studies to look at the sublethal effects or subacute effects, because those studies are really hard to do. They're expensive. They take a long time.
Okay. So with EcoHab, how long have you been with EcoHab, and which is part of NOAA?
EcoHab has been in existence since 1998. I became the program manager in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And it's focused on understanding what makes the blooms occur and also understanding the impacts on the ecosystems and the organisms in the ecosystems.
Okay. If you had your wish, who do you think should be paying for all this? You know, because you're saying that it's not funded and this and that. Who do you think it's really, we should all be involved with getting this research done? Do you think it's more of a government? Do you think it's more of some of the corporations involved with, you know, some people think it's a lot of the sugar companies and all that. And I know you're saying the research doesn't point to that, but is that really something that they should be involved in helping to research whether or not they are actually part of this increase or existence of the red tide?
Well, at present, it's mostly the states and the federal government, a number of agencies. Congress has increased our budget the last couple of years. And I'm sure that people can talk to their members of Congress about what they think should be done in addition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I do see a lot of that campaigning going on the television. I try to stay away from television and too much politics. I do listen to NPR, of course.
Yes,
but,
so
you know, the reality is they're making these things political. But I think we're past that. And I just, you know, I really, the reason I want to do this show is obviously there's a health concern here, a real serious health concern. But I feel alarmed. And I feel like we all need to be on the same page with this. And I do think it has a lot to do with what we can do. I just don't feel like it's a purely natural occurrence. And so that's what I'm trying to get to, is how we can be effective. So if you were to give us maybe 3 to 5 pointers of what we can do as the American public to help with this, can you give us that?
Well, I think people need to inform themselves about it. For example, because there is a lot of misinformation going around.
Yes.
And I think both the state of Florida, FWRI, Moat Marine Lab, NOAA all have good websites with good information about it. And so I think people should inform themselves. And, of course, I can't talk about politics and what they should do politically. But people need to inform themselves and decide who they should talk to about this problem. I think it's an issue that, because there have been bad blooms now in Lake Erie, I think you're probably familiar with the Toledo, where they could not drink the water because of toxins, a totally different toxin, actually the same toxin that was in Lake Okeechobee. Affects Lake Erie, and the city of Toledo had to shut off their water supply several years ago. So that was one. West Coast had a bloom in 2015 that shut down the entire crab fishery on the entire West Coast, plus other fisheries, and caused a great deal of concern. And then the East Coast has had for a long time red tides up in the Gulf of Maine, and now new species of totally different toxins are showing up there. So this is a growing problem that we haven't talked at all about the shellfish problem, both in Florida and in other states. The toxins also get into shellfish, and the state of Florida and all states have monitoring programs to check for toxins in shellfish and to make sure that toxic shellfish don't get into interstate commerce. And because this has become a growing problem, I think the states are speaking up a lot about this issue in order to protect human health.
Yes.
So people should also be talking to their states and looking up what their states are doing.
Right. So this is not only a Florida problem. This is a national problem. And I think that, for me, it hit home when it hit the Atlantic Ocean. I felt like I understand the Gulf, it's sort of contained, the sun's just pounding there, there's not much current, you know, and you say, okay, maybe there's some acceptability, but not really. It shouldn't be happening, but you understand why it's a little bit more there. You've got the Atlantic Ocean, huge current, fast waters, and then you've got this red tide, which is from, you know, St. Lucie County all the way to Miami, and that's hitting almost to the Keys. I mean, that you're right. This is a growing problem. So, yes, I do encourage people to get informed, and thank you for sharing those agencies. I think also, too, what might be acceptable may not be acceptable. So learn what the acceptable levels are of algae blooms, I would say, correct, doctor, but understand that there's also a sort of a space there where we're not really clear on what is truly acceptable, you know, because for me, like I said, they said, okay, it's fine, but I know people that are still in Palm Beach County going by the beach and feeling affected by what's going on, so I don't think that's acceptable, right? So...
Yes, it's been very hard on tourism and local businesses.
Yes,
and I think that the impacts are going to be felt for a while.
Yes. Well, like they say, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but we do want to learn how to maybe secure our future for our children. I do want to take my children fishing in Mosquito Lagoon at some point in next few years, and I hope that we can repair what's been done, and I hope we can figure it out, and I hope we can all get on the same page as a nation, because I think this is a national crisis at this point. I really feel it is, and it needs to be treated as such, and we need to put politics aside and really get on the ball here. And I thank you, and I'm thankful for NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It's a government agency, so that's NOAA .gov, G-O-V. And I thank you, Dr. Quay Dorch, for all the work you're doing, the hard work, and keeping us informed and coming up with solutions and being such a conduit for our nation, or our global health. Before we come to a close, Dr. Dorch, we would just, I'd like you to tell our listeners again a few websites or searches that they can go to find out about the state of red tide and become more informed.
Well, the state of Florida has an excellent website at FWRI. Red Tide, Current Conditions, Moat Marine Lab, Red Tide, Beach Conditions, and NOAA has a webpage at the National Ocean Service. Also look for Red Tide, and those can provide excellent information for your listeners.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Quay Dorch. This has been another Maximum Health, Quality Living, with yours truly, Dr. Ken Gray. See you next time.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make a better place with my own.